thank you for your attention. I'm Dan Gibbons from City Club, and it's great to have you all here on this beautiful Chicago summer day. We have a lot to discuss, so we're going to get to it as quickly as possible, but we can't get to these conversations without sincerely acknowledging and thanking those who sponsor our events so that we're allowed to have these great gatherings and pull all of you amazing people together. I think this mic's going out, so maybe if we turn this one on. Okay. Thank you for that. So thank you to those sponsors, Cozen O'Connor Public Strategies. I'm going to go through them real quick. Cozen O'Connor is right over here. EY, I think, is right over here. Guidehouse is here. Mesereau Financial, there's Guidehouse. Mesereau, here we go. MPEA, I told them I'll try not to spit. You guys are up close. We're squeezing in today. Stiefel, of course. Stiefel has, I think, three tables here. Thank you, Omar. Uber is here. Alex, thank you, Alex Fink and Uber. B of A Securities, Oppenheimer and Company, United Airlines. Where's Chris? Hey, Chris. The William Everett Group as well. Thank you. Please give all those folks a round of applause because it is appreciated. And you know, we always, if you're a regular here, you know, we always like to acknowledge who's in the room for a host of reasons. It's really great to understand, especially for the speakers, to understand who they're speaking to and with in this conversation. But also for everybody to understand why you're here. You know, that when we bring these folks together from the public sector, private sector, you know, it's everything from elected officials to philanthropic folks to watchdog groups. Everybody's here together, and pretty much everyone has the same goal of making Chicago and the Chicagoland area better. So many of those folks have dedicated so much of their lives to that. It's great to acknowledge them. Now, again, I'll ask you to hold applause, but except for this one, because she is my favorite alderman, because she's my alderman. So even though we're unbiased, I can say that. Chairwoman Pat Dowell is here. Thank you, Chairwoman Dowell. And a former alderman, and now is Cook County Board of Review Commissioner, George Cardenas, is here as well. Thank you. And there is, I apologize to him for his seating there, but all seats are great at City Club. We had a full crowd today. Council General from Ireland, Brian Cahillane, is here. The Inspector General, Deb Witzberg, is here. And a quick plug for Inspector General Deb Witzberg. She's coming to speak on the 26th of August. Thank you for being here, Deb. Charvette from the CCAC, Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Nick Valerano, a civic member of the City Club from Mayor Brown, does so much for us. Thank you, Nick, and everybody at Mayor Brown. Jack Lavin from the Chamber. Jack's busy. There you are, right in front. Julian Federley is here from Amazon, another civic level member. Gilla Bronner is here. She's a great City Club. And we were just talking. I appreciate feedback from our members and our higher level members. There's a lot more that we're doing and more offerings for different levels of members. And we appreciate your feedback and your ideas for these programs. And I mentioned that to her, and I encourage all of you to share those with us as we continue to revamp what we're doing here at City Club. So thank you for that, and thank you for your membership. I didn't see David Doig here. If you're here, raise your hand. Nope. Okay, he's on his way. Carr Bachman from the Chicago Sports Commission has had a very busy summer. Just getting started, right? David Greising from the BGA, a great partner of ours as well. Blue Pacheco Cornejo is here. Blue Azul Center. I mentioned Chris Anderson. Oh, and there's a man here who knows a little bit about a budget or two, and his name is Paul Volpe. If you have any questions, Paul's right in the back. He's been through a few of these budgets before. Thank you, Paul, for being here. That's just, again, a sampling. Come back again and more often, and I'm sure you'll be on that list if you weren't today. So thank you to all those folks for being here to be part of this conversation. And today is going to be a conversation and I'm going to sit down here with our two guests of honor to talk about city finances. It's a much bigger conversation than just having one panel or one speech. So what we're going to do is set it up today and get to as much as we can with the idea that we're going to have one and possibly two programs as follow-ups with some different panelists. And of course, Jill and Annette have agreed to be part of those conversations as well as this whole process unfolds for what is the obviously the annual budget season. So please join me in welcoming two of the city's top fiscal problem solvers, Annette Guzman, Chicago's budget director. She's led the charge in closing a nearly $1 billion deficit and delivering a balanced $17.1 billion budget. Joining her on this stage, Jill Jaworski, the city CFO. Welcome, Jill. Jill brings over two decades of experience helping governments finance major public projects and navigate complex financial challenges. Together, they're tackling some of the toughest budget issues facing our city and some of the most difficult times in our city and our country. I'm going to sit down with them, and I have a few pre-submitted questions. Let's make sure this is still working. I have a few pre-submitted questions. Hopefully at the end we'll have some time, but if you do have any questions, please keep them in mind. We'd like to get the mic out a little bit later. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to City Club. As I mentioned, you know, there's so much to tackle. So we're gonna spend, I think, a few minutes today from take a step back, right, and take a big look. What is the budget? What is the budget season look like? Why is this so important? What are we funding? That's six questions. But help us. There are many experts in the room, but then there are also civic leaders and others who may not understand exactly how this all works. I think we all know there's a big hole, and there's a lot to achieve to get to fill that hole. So what we talked about doing today is just getting around to some of the basics with then a few specific questions along the way. So welcome. I'm going to ask you, Annette, to kick us off and maybe give us a bit of an overview of this budget and what we see coming and the process.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here. You know, I can talk about budgets all day. I think that they're very interesting. I think that, you know, we always talk about how budgets are moral documents. Never more so than for governments, because it really does reflect what our priorities are, both in the short term and what we hope to aspire to in the long term. And so I'm very excited to be here today amidst, you know, our city leaders, amidst our business leaders, amidst our civic leaders, having a conversation about why are we where we are today and where do we want to see our city go in the future. And I'm glad that you asked sort of six questions all at once, because I often think that we always want to solve the math problem without really thinking about what is it that the city's budget supports and why is it that the city has chosen those things in particular to support. And I think that that's always a good level setting for us to be at, because at the end of the day, you know, the city is really focused on ensuring that we are promoting you know, our city, our business leaders, our communities, our neighborhoods, but that we're also making sure that we're standing in the gap for those who need services, who need a little bit more of support to get, you know, further in life. And so, you know, some of the things that you probably hear Mayor Johnson talk a lot about are the things that he sees will help move the city forward. And so I want to start by talking about how, you know, we are shaping the budget to ensure that it is investing in making this city safer and making the city more affordable. We all know that not only our city, but other cities across the country have an affordability crisis at their hands. I think there was an article today in Cranes about just how the city of Chicago doesn't have enough affordable units to support the residents of the city. And so, you know, when we talk about those investments, how do we make our city safer? How do we make our city more affordable? So what you've seen over the last several years in the city's budget really focus on those things, making our city safer. You know, over $100 million in investments in community violence intervention programs. And we have started to see the practical impact of those investments, whether it's the investments in traditional policing or it's investments in those reduction strategies. We have, 32% less homicides year over year, 39% less shootings, 33% less robberies. We're seeing vehicular car thefts down in the city of Chicago. And I want to be really clear, by no means are we saying that we have achieved the goal that we have set out for ourselves, but these are measurable declines that are putting us in a position to see even more declines in the future. We talk about a lot about youth employment. We know that there's a lot that we need to do to ensure that our kids are engaged, that our kids are positioned well in the future, whether it's for the jobs of today or the jobs of tomorrow. And so, you know, this past budget, we saw an increase in the number of youth jobs that were included. 30,000 youth are being hired through the city of Chicago, and that is on top of the programming that's provided by your businesses, our philanthropic leaders in the city as well. You know, one of the things that we heard and that I know a lot of you experienced through the pandemic is in a crisis around mental health supports and not having enough support in the city, not only through the city, but also through other providers. And so we focused on increasing access to mental health operators by reopening one mental health clinic and expanding offerings in other locations throughout the city. And so, you know, when we talk about how do we make our city safer, we're trying to really focus on root causes to ensure that, you know, this is sustained promotion and not just one-time reductions in violence in our city. Moving on to housing, since I mentioned it earlier, you know, since 2023, we've seen just under 4,000 new affordable housing units built in the city of Chicago. And we have another just under 5,000 in the pipeline to be built over the course of this year. And that is, you know, another $440 million investment that'll be multi-year going forward. Last year, the city council passed a $1.25 billion housing and economic development bond as we're shifting the way that we fund these from traditional TIF funding to more sustainable funding sources as TIFs start to expire. And then we know that homelessness over the last several years has started to increase. While the city pre-2020 did start to see a depreciable decline in homelessness in the city since the pandemic and definitely throughout the crisis that we saw between 22 and 24, when immigrants were bused to the city of Chicago, we saw our homeless population explode. And so for this year's budget, we combined our shelter networks into one, what we call one system, where anyone who is experiencing homelessness or anyone who needs wraparound services can get that assistance. And what we have seen is for the first time in a decade, we have had no families on our waiting list in the city of Chicago. So we more than doubled the amount of beds in our homeless shelter. And so those are just some of the just immediate things that, you know, again, going to root causes, how do we move our city forward? I'll let Jill talk a little bit about some of these positive economic indicators, but you heard the mayor and you heard the new head of Choose Chicago and also the commissioner of aviation talk about this last week, how we're just seeing more traffic in the city of Chicago, more people coming to the city of Chicago. I saw Kara was mentioned a minute ago, more sporting events in our city. And we're just seeing a lot of economic activity. So, Jill, I'll turn it over to you to talk a little bit about that, those economic indicators.
Sure. We've got some points up here. I think the key thing that we want people to understand is we really have had what we think is a full recovery when we're talking about the tourism industry here in Chicago. We're seeing hotel rooms that are above where they were pre-pandemic. This year, hotel room demand was up 2.9%. Hotel revenues were up $1.24 billion, which is a really significant amount of money into that sector and really supporting our local economy. One exciting thing is really seeing the return of the airline traffic in a very fulsome way to O'Hare. Midway was our first, the first of our two airports to fully recover from the pandemic. And O'Hare lagged a little bit as far as recovery, but a lot of that was really because that is our airport that, you know, serves the international traffic, and we've seen a decline in traffic to the Far East. That's every airport in the United States. But we have now had enough recovery that we've recovered past, you know, through that. And we saw the busiest day ever at O'Hare on July 20th, around the Juneteenth holiday. So tremendous uptick in activity going on at our airports, in our hotels. And I think, you know, everybody knows what it's like walking around downtown and by the lakefront. I mean, it's just been incredible. You know, I went to NASCAR for the first time this year. I had a blast. I know it's not around next year, but it's between NASCAR, Lollapalooza, so many events. You know, we've got the MLB All-Star Game that's going to be coming here soon. It's just really exciting, I think, to, you know, experience what's going on in Chicago right now. This is, you know, we're not going to spend our time talking about investments, but, you know, we hear a lot of negativity sometimes about Chicago and the problems we have. But I just really want to emphasize, too, that beyond just some of these numbers, when I think about what I see going on with, you know, the investments that are going on around the United Center, you know, the new, and I'm not going to get the name right, the new place that's going across the street from the new casino, the new horror place that's going in, and then the new Magic Theater, all this. These are private investments that businesses are choosing to pony up large dollars and invest them in our city. And I don't think there's anything that says more about the financial health of the Chicagoland area and about the enthusiasm that people have than when we see businesses making these kind of investments in Chicago. The proof is in the pudding, as they say.
You mentioned sports. I know we talked here recently with Commissioner Boatwright about, for instance, the new Chicago Fire Stadium coming in. Those are all great signs, right? Great signs. It's going to take some time to get all this, but good news, right? Everything you mentioned is good news, and they all add up, but it doesn't quite add up to what we need, right? I mean, I think that's, we can just be very honest about that. And great news, by the way. I mean, we have United and American Airlines here, and, you know, everybody's doing their part to add to this resurgence, right, of Chicago. But there's really there's a disconnect, right? There's only so much that we can raise from those entities and that we can use for the city budget, right? Can you explain what it is that we are allowed to use for our budget, how we can tax, and some of the, I call it a disconnect, but maybe, you know, some of the complexities between the state and the city and what limitations we have.
Yeah, so I have had the great pleasure of being able to spend a lot of time over the last, like, 3 months with Ralph Materi of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. really smart guy. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is the difference between home rule authority that certain municipalities in the state have and what the state controls. And Jill's going to talk a lot about the taxing structure because it has a lot to do with what we can do. Sorry, what we can do with our budget and what we have to, you know, advocate for downstate in order to bring more dollars back to the city of Chicago, because we are a net contributor to the state of Illinois. We are the economic engine of the state of Illinois. But just giving you a little bit of history on the city's budget, this is showing you pre-pandemic and then our current budget post-pandemic. so what you see is, you know, because you hear a lot of people say, well, the city's budget has grown, you know, $5 billion. Well, that's to be expected, given that, you know, the city received an enormous amount of COVID-19 dollars in our grant fund. And I like to make that point a lot because it sits in our grant fund. It's not sitting in our corporate fund. Just like we think about all grants that we receive, to the extent that a grant goes away, a lot of times that programming goes away unless we're able to find a way to sustain the programming if we think it's a priority program for the city. So the three areas that we see the largest expansion of the city's budget was grants. So those kind of one-time transformative dollars that the federal government provided both to sustain municipalities and states through the pandemic and then to assist in the recovery from the pandemic was incredibly large. We saw 107% increase in our pension fund since 2019. Okay. But at the same time, we saw a decrease in our debt service. I know there's been a lot of talk about bonds in the city of Chicago. We've actually been managing our debt service rather responsibly. And over the course of 2020 to 2025, we've seen about a 56% decrease in debt service that is supported by the budget. And then the last area that we've seen the largest increase is actually in our enterprise funds. So what are our enterprise funds? Our water and sewer and our two airports. What's happening with those two enterprises? We have an immense amount of infrastructure that is happening around our airports. I know that we have some of our airlines in the room. And we are doing a lot of work with our water funds and our sewer fund because we have to replace all the lead pipes in the city of Chicago by a specific deadline that has been set for us. And so we have...
You're going to hear Commissioner Randy Counter come and talk about soon at City Club.
That's great because he has a lot to say. but it is a massive amount of infrastructure work that's happening in the city of Chicago. Not only, hopefully, you know, progressing our infrastructure for decades to come, but also will provide the type of infrastructure we need in order to attract, you know, businesses and residents to the city of Chicago. So we've seen our budget grow in specific areas to mirror those types of things that are happening. just really quickly, that was the revenue side. I'll talk a little bit about the expenditure side. So between 2019 and 2024, on the expenditure side, very similar picture. While our personnel services, which is where we spend the money for our personnel, has really remained pretty stable. What has changed mostly is our what we call specific items contingencies. That's where we spend the funding for our settlements and judgments, our pension payments, our benefit costs, and our debt service. That is where you've seen the largest expansion in the budget. Again, pensions went from $1.4 billion in 2019 to $2.8 billion. On the right-hand side, what you see is, you know, in the city of Chicago, property taxes are what largely pay for our large liabilities, debt service, and pensions. And with the property tax only increasing by new property value over the last 3.5 years, it hasn't grown to sustain or support the pension costs based on the ramp that we are having to now pay under state law. And so what that means is that our corporate dollars, our general operating funds, are going more and more to pay for long-term liabilities in the city's budget, crowding out the ability to use those funds to support our day-to-day operating and service provision. So with that, that's why conversations like this are so important. One, not only are we trying to, you know, continue to educate people about what's actually in the budget, but we also want to listen. We also want to hear the ideas that people have about how we can attack some of these issues, given some of the restrictions and limitations that we have as a municipality. And so there have been two things that have happened this year, which we're really excited about hearing from other people. Mainly, you know, the city does budget engagements throughout the year. We actually have stakeholders that actually develop our budget engagements. So we have You know, if you're interested in helping us develop our budget engagements, sign up. But we have, you know, our residents and other stakeholders who develop it, and then they put it on. And we had almost 1,000 residents who attended our four budget engagements this year. And we had over 1,000 people respond to surveys on both priorities related to expenditures as well as revenues. On top of that, the mayor signed an executive order this year establishing a working group made up of a lot of similar individuals like you in this room, businesses, civic leaders, community leaders, labor leaders. And I have had the privilege of sitting in on some of their conversations. They've interviewed a lot of people in the city of Chicago. They've dug into the budget. They're asking all the right questions. And I think that when you have that diverse of a group of people sitting down, digging, asking all the right questions, you know, we are hopeful that we'll get recommendations from a diverse lens.
And what is that? Is that a report, or what is the end game there? Do they come back with a report and some recommendations?
Yeah, so they'll come with a preliminary report. You know, the budget didn't get to where it was overnight, and so getting it into fiscal health is not going to happen overnight. So their actual report is due next year in May, so their final report. But we knew that we couldn't pass up the opportunity to hear their thoughts while we're going through this year's budget. So they will be releasing a preliminary report in this month, actually, to the mayor. I think it'll come out publicly sometime in September. And, you know, this is, again, people who are grappling with very difficult issues, very difficult concepts. They actually attended our budget engagements, listened to residents as well. So, you know, at a time where the federal government is dramatically reducing services that people rely on, you know, how do we ensure that we as a city are, you know, making provisions and services to people who need them the most at a time where we're facing fiscal constraint? And so, you know, my hope is, you know, with that diverse of a group of people, that we'll get some recommendations that really do kind of span the lens of, you know, how people, you know, either work or live in the city of Chicago.
I know you have some slides. I don't know if we've, and I don't want to take us off of that if there's anything you want to get to next. But I think a lot of those recommendations are, so many of the recommendations are hopefully coming from folks who understand what the limitations are, right? And I want to get back to those limitations. And help everyone here understand what Chicago has the authority to do. What do we have? What do we have the? And I'm sorry, I don't mean to make you jump around here. But what do we?
Yeah, we can jump into that.
Let's get into what we have the authority to do, or maybe what we don't have the authority to do.
No, I think these are important questions. you know, what we have here is the basic framework for taxing that comes to the city of Chicago is we have state taxes, we have local taxes, and then we have some taxes that are state collected and passed through. And that can range for something like the corporate income tax, which is passed through as PPRT, or also things like the sales tax, of which there is a state portion, there is a state portion that is passed on, and there is our local portion, but the state collects all of that. Those are the three main ways in which we are taxing. If we move to the next slide, the key thing that we've got on this slide is this is some state law here. And what I want everyone to focus on is that what it says here is a home rule unit shall have only the power. So only the power, not all the powers. Only the power that the General Assembly may provide by law, and we'll focus on number two, to license for revenue or impose taxes upon or measured by income or earnings or upon occupations. What this means is the state must give us the power to do these things. We do not independently, without the state granting it, without the General Assembly granting it, have the authority to impose taxes upon revenue as measured by income or earnings or upon occupations. So the big thing about this is it's a very large limitation that we have. And some of the large things that people come to say, well, why don't you have an income tax in Chicago? Because of this. There's been a lot of talk lately about sort of a twist on the head tax. It's more of a corporate income tax style. You know, again, this impacts the ability to do anything like that. So this is the biggest limitation that we have. We really can't do graduated taxes. We can't tax income. And importantly, we also don't have the authority to tax most services. So if we flip through to the next page, I think one of the things we want to talk about, and you know, feel free to jump in, you know, with questions, but one of the things that we are really intensely experiencing at the city and have been for the last 5 to 10 years is a decrease in revenues, both on the federal but mainly on the state side. And one of the reasons that we're seeing this decrease in revenues is because some of the revenues that are supposed to go to local governments, the state is using part of those revenues for their own budgets. And so we'll talk about personal income tax, corporate income tax, we'll talk about another state impact on the grocery tax, and then sort of the general framework on sales tax and how each one of these things is impacting us. But quick highlights here. LGDF is local government distributed fund. That is personal income tax. 10% of that used to go to localities. So the state kept 90% of the personal income tax. It's a major funder of state operations. 10% was divided amongst all the localities in the state. A number of years back, the state raised the income tax temporarily. And when they did that, they lowered the percentage from 10% to localities to 6%. The idea being, well, we grew up the amount we're bringing in, so we don't need to grow your amount. We'll shrink your amount, you shrink your percent, you'll end up with the same dollar amount. That was supposed to be temporary, but temporary has become permanent. We still do not receive 10%. That's costing us about $250 million a year. Corporate income tax, called PPRT, personal property replacement tax. The state is been passing with each budget now larger and larger amounts, which they take to fund other priorities of the state. That is supposed to be a pass-through. $43 million we lost this year in PPRT diversions. And then coming up next year, grocery tax. The state collected grocery tax for all municipalities across the state in the governor's budget, not this year, but the last one. They eliminated the grocery tax, forcing every local government who has it to revote it or lose it. And so if that is not revoted by city council, we'll lose $80 million. These type of things are putting a big crimp, you know, in our budget and our ability to deliver the services that we need to deliver to the city of Chicago. Next slide. We'll do a little bit teeny bit deeper dive on LGDF. There we go. So this again, this is LGDF. This is the personal income tax. If you look at the chart on the left, you see the blue line, that is the personal income taxes. And you can see they're going up steadily over time, some dips, but generally steadily going up over time. The red line that's all the way at the bottom is so low, it looks like it's the axis. That's the local government distributive fund. It is going up, but barely. So that shows you personal income tax going up strongly. The amount going to localities, not moving very much at all. So we zoned in on the next one on the right, on the city share. The red is what we've actually received, our portion of that little red line that's not moving a lot, versus what it should be if it was still at 10%. And it's a big gap there, $250 million a year. Since 2020, $1.2 billion that you know we have not received because of having this lower rate. In the last 10 years, $21.1 billion has been received by local governments. It would have been $32.8 billion by all local governments in Illinois. That's $11.7 billion that went to the state's budget and did not go to local governments. If we go to the next slide. Once again, this is corporate income tax. Corporate income tax, in 1979, the state took over the corporate income tax. It used to be that localities actually had their own corporate income tax. So the city, county, many cities and villages, other entities like Chicago Public Schools were a direct recipient. The state came in and took that over, which makes a lot of sense for a tax like that. There's a lot of efficiencies to be had and consistency when you've got a state that's operating the collections for these kind of broad-based taxes. So this is not unusual. It's actually a very appropriate thing to do. The state stepped in. Their job was to collect the tax and turn around and distribute it back to the localities. That's why it's called a personal property replacement tax. It's replacing a tax that had previously existed. the percentages were set back in 1979, how much each locality got. We receive 11.57%. Chicago Public Schools receives 14%. The red bars on the left, that's the money the state takes off the top to fund their priorities. So instead of taking the corporate income tax and distributing it out in full to localities the way it used to, now they always took a little to cover administration and stuff, but you can see how it's ramped up. It was $20 million at the beginning of this 15-year time period. Now it's up to about $380 million. Between us, the city, and CPS, that totals almost $90 million, just those two institutions are not receiving in the corporate income tax. So on the right-hand side, the dark blue is all of the other local governments. The green is CPS, and the light blue at the top is the city. These are things that make a really substantial impact in our revenues. Next one we're going to get to, I'll try to go quick so we get to more questions. Grocery tax. Again, the state was the collector of grocery tax. This makes sense. They collect sales tax. They're in a position that they can collect and distribute that back to all the local governments, except, again, in the budget prior to this one, the state just eliminated it and told everyone you have to revote it if you want to keep getting it. Now, at this point, we have seen 374 cities, townships, and villages in Illinois revoted it and put it back into place. We will need to have revoted that and put it into place by October 1st in order for us to get a full year of collections next year. This, unfortunately, is not in sync with our budget timing. We will not be, our city council will not be voting on our budget by then. And so if it does not pass by then, it'll have to be something that gets taken up and considered as part of our budget process, but that would mean that we would at most get half a year collection next year, so we would lose $40 million if it was revoted as part of our budget practice.
And what's the temperature on that now? Is there support from that? We have one or two.
There's somebody in the audience who could probably answer that better than me, but I am not going to put her on the spot because she is, I'm going to compete with you on this, my favorite alderman and my alderman as well. But, I would say on the temperature,
we're going to come back.
What I really can say is there's a lot of differing opinions. And, the challenge is, of course, that when people hear grocery tax, they think, oh, everybody has to eat. We shouldn't tax groceries just like we shouldn't tax health care. But a lot of people don't understand the full nuance of it. One is it's a very low rate. It's only 1%. So, your average individual actually only spends $50, $60 a year on this tax. And it does not apply to anybody using SNAP. So no SNAP benefits are taxed at all. So that was designed to make it, not a regressive tax. And so I think when you take into account the nuances of it, if you really dig in, you'll realize it's not a really regressive tax. But, it stirs a lot of feelings in people. And so I think we have folks who say, we need it in our budget. I absolutely want to pass it. And we have folks who say, like, wow, I'm kind of uncomfortable that we ever tax groceries at all. There's a whole range. So I don't, we'll see where it comes out. But, it's a challenging situation for the state to have taken an established tax and just and put it back into the local's hand and say, you all need to revote it. It's made, every city, village, township that's had to revote it has been put into an uncomfortable position doing it. Now, what we have seen in most places that are revoted, it has been near unanimous. So we do see that there has been a lot of support in other communities. But we can never compare Chicago to that many other communities in Illinois. We are our own beast.
And I should say that this particular tax, even though the state has eliminated it, the state has not eliminated their collection of it. So as each township, municipality, and village votes to keep it in place, the state will continue to collect it on behalf of those villages, townships, and municipalities, which is why we have to vote and pass it by a certain time of year so that they know that it's supposed to be in place by January 1st.
And for those of you who follow this, you might also remember that while the state chose to take it out in their budget, it didn't cost the state anything because the state doesn't keep the grocery tax for themselves. So in their own budget, they took a tax away from local governments that did not help their own budget. So these are some of the challenges that we are dealing with that I think it's not fully understood when people think about our budget. And I think it's easy when you think about the city's budget and you hear deficit and you hear it year after year to think, gosh, they must be mismanaging things. Why can't they get their expenses under control? Why is it every year? Two reasons why it's every year. Legacy liabilities, pensions have gone up so much, just like the numbers Annette talked earlier, and this taxing framework. We had a chart that we passed by earlier, maybe we'll get back to it, that shows that this, how much the state has declined, the state and local government, the state and federal support has declined, and the portion of our local income our local taxes has gone up. And so, you know, we see here on this slide that the blue bars, which is local income, they just have to keep going up because the green bars, they went up during COVID. You see they're back down. They're just flat. Our budget grows with inflation. It has to. Even disregarding that our pension costs and things like that are driving our costs up year after year by a lot, even without that, our budget's going to grow every year. Mostly what we pay for at the city is people. Everybody who you see out there on the streets, you know, streets and sand, keeping our city the cleanest, best, most beautiful big city in this country. Our police officers who are out there every day dealing with the challenges that they face in a very difficult job, bringing crimes down. The people that you see in City Hall, this is we're a service is what the city is. And so our people, we have to keep paying them more because their cost of living go up more. So just like everybody in here who's a business person and you've given raises over the last few years and a lot bigger raises in COVID than you had been giving for years before, we've had to do the same thing. So our revenues need to go up with inflation just to deliver our services. So let me flip to the last thing that I wanted to talk about, which is sales tax. And so in Illinois, we tax goods. This is a state level requirement. You know, we are allowed to impose our own sales tax, which we have. Everybody in the room knows that we all pay a lot of sales tax here in Chicago. It's a combination of things, the state sales tax, the city sales tax, the county's got some in there. RTA has sales tax. That's the primary funder of CTA and the other service boards providing transit. All of that adds up to a sales tax that's over 10%, second highest in the country. This is a challenging situation for us as a city. It's not good for our retail businesses, you know, who are at a competitive disadvantage. And we're higher than all of our surrounding states, of course. But the biggest reason we have such a high sales tax rate is because our sales tax base is so narrow and so small. We only tax goods. If you look at this chart here, what you see is in the green, that line, that's the amount of consumer spending spent on goods. Go back in the 1950s, 70% of consumer spending was spent on goods. So a sales tax on goods made sense in 1950. But if you look now, it's only 50% on goods. And 50% is on services. By the way, if you've seen other charts, you might have seen other charts that would show you that 60 or 70% is on services. Because when we add in healthcare and housing, it actually gets up to 60 or 70%. But excluding healthcare, excluding housing, that type of thing, regular services, people spend 50% of their consumer spending on services. And we are not taxing it.
Give us a few examples of that.
Yes. So let me give you an example. I always like to give myself as the example. Let me just step back 1 second before I get into this. The result of us doing this is there's lots of activity we're not taxing, right? But number two is it's very regressive. If you are lower income, if you're on a $25,000 a year budget, and we're going to talk specifically about being on that budget later, if you're on that budget, you're spending, most of your spending is on goods. So after your rent has eaten up your expenses in your car, food, you're getting backpacks for your kids, you're buying clothes, not a lot left over for services. Almost everything's going out of goods, and you're being taxed on all of it. I have a gym membership. I get a massage every month. I get my nails done. I get my hair done. I consume a lot of services. And I get spa day now and then when I can get out, maybe post-budget.
You look very relaxed for having...
I like to use a travel agent because I want to go on fabulous vacations. But I pay no
decorator.
I am going to do some work in my house. I'm going to pay an interior decorator to help me do. I have a couple rooms in my house I want to redo. I pay no taxes on any of that. And like everyone sitting in this room, maybe not everyone, let me say, most people sitting in this room, I can afford to pay taxes on the activities that I engage in that are frankly luxury activities. And I should be paying taxes on them. I should be paying a higher percentage of my income on the activities and the things that I enjoy. They are a major part of our economy, and I am not contributing any taxes on those. And that's because of our taxing framework. Whereas somebody who is living paycheck to paycheck is paying tax on most everything they do. That is regressive, and it is unfair. And it's not unfair just because it's bad for our budget that we're not taxing all this activity. It's bad for our budget. It's bad for the state's budget. It's bad taxing policy. Less than 10 states in this country are in the same position as us. More than 40 states tax services all the states around us do. When we talk about this, a lot of people say, oh, you know, my haircut's going to get taxed. What's that going to do to my barber? Your barber is going to add the tax on, and you're going to pay it. And you're not going to Indiana to get your haircut because you'd have to pay it there, too. So we can do this. The best thing about thinking about sales tax on services is it isn't just a situation where if the state were to pass legislation authorizing services to be included, that you just start taxing all these services and just raise, you know, billions more dollars. Actually, what you really want to do in the situation is expand the base so that we're covering all those things that was in the prior chart. Expand the base. But number two, we can lower the tax rate if we expand the base. If the city were able to tax services, we could lower our rate. The state could lower their rate. Every entity that's charging a sales tax could, in fact, lower their rate. And by the way, if we kept RTAs the same, it would solve a big chunk of the fiscal crisis for CTA and the other service boards. Just a side note, back in your mind. We could get under that 10.25%, that double-digit shocker, that when people come and visit Chicago and stay in our beautiful hotels and go eat at our amazing restaurants and go to all the events here and then go shopping in Michigan Avenue and look stuff up online and say, I'll buy that and ship it home. I'm not going to buy it here because I don't want to pay that tax. If we expand the services, we can lower our rate and we can have a more competitive tax rate. That'll be better for our citizens. It'll be easier on our lower-income citizens. Yes, it'll cost those of us in this room more, of course, but that's fine. We can afford it. It'll be better for our retail businesses who are in a competitive disadvantage, and it'll be good for government. It makes for better tax policy, and generally we're going to bring in more money overall. So I'm going to have my soapbox on all that, but I will do one last slide that's up here on sales tax service. I want to show you the impact to the state of Illinois on the fact that we only tax goods. So this is showing how much growth has been experienced by our neighboring states in sales tax. Illinois is way over on the left. The little one, that's Illinois. The bigger ones are all our surrounding states. What we see here on the bottom, the dark blue, it's coming up as black, that's the growth that we've seen in sales tax just due to inflation. So that's inflationary action. And then the green is all the growth that they've seen for other reasons. So that's new activity, people's spending habits shifting to services instead of goods. And as you can see, we're barely moving the needle on that. So we are not keeping up with a changing economy and the way people spend money in a modern age. And because of that, it's costing us a lot of money. Our surrounding states are flourishing when it comes to their sales tax revenue, but we are not. So these are the, you know, sort of, I think what I would say is the, you know, core things that are challenging to us in, you know, this sort of tax framework that we have in Illinois. We have major taxes that we're seeing either not be expanded to a large enough base, or we're seeing them taken off the top, money being spent on other priorities for the state. We've seen our rates decline. And I haven't even touched the fact that we have a regressive tax system already because of the fact that we do not have any ability to have a graduated income tax on any type of personal income or any other type of corporate income or anything like that. You know, we are way behind. Again, almost all states have a graduated income tax, just like our federal government does. You know, I think we all know as a basic tenet that, you know, the more you earn, the more you can afford to be taxed. And it's not to say that we want to flip our tax system in Illinois to a tax system that's burdensome on the rich. Well, we want to get our tax system to a place where it's not burdensome on the poor. We just need to be able to even out some of the ways that we're taxing. And when things like income tax was the exact same rate as someone who's making, you know, $30,000 a year as someone who's making $300,000 a year, that's patently unfair. And it restricts our ability to do things like raise the income tax in a way that could benefit the city, the state, and other governments being able to deliver services, because we really can't raise it because it hurts the lower end so much. When the graduated income tax was on the ballot previously, if that had passed, we would have seen income taxes on lower income and middle income individuals go down and income taxes on upper income individuals go up. It would have really been a big change to make our tax system less regressive. So ultimately, the tax system we have, where we're not able to be more, you know, as progressive as we want, you know, we still are in different ways looking at all the revenues that we can and make them as progressive as possible, but we can't be as progressive as we'd like. We've seen this, you know, reduction in revenues coming at the state level, which bolsters the state's budget but hurts ours. This is all leads to this fiscal strain that we encounter every year. Just gets back to my point about when you look at the deficit, you think, my God, again, what's with the city? These are the things that are affecting us, that are putting so much strain on our fiscal system. I want to do one last thing. I want to show you what this regressivity really means to people.
Hopefully quickly, because we do have just a couple minutes.
Yeah, this is quick. There's a punchline here. You know, you can see it. If you earn $25,000 a year,
this is less important.
If you earn $25,000 a year in Illinois, your total tax burden, all the various taxes you pay, state, local, everything, 19.4%. 19.4% of your earnings, if you make $25,000 a year, go to taxes. It's a lot of money, $4,800. $4,800 is a tremendous amount of money when you only make $25,000. Now, if you make $250,000 a year, your tax burden is 11.5%. If you make $150,000, 11.9%. Now, in a way, it would be fair if those rates were all the same, but it would still be harder on low income. It really should be that the rate is higher on upper income and lower on lower income. But in this state, it's backwards. It's backwards. We actually tax at a higher rate if you're low income. It makes no sense at all. And again, but it goes back to that restriction we talked about in the beginning, where we're not able to put in any kind of graduated taxes. We're not able to put graduated taxes on personal income, corporate income, all the kind of things that could lessen the regressivity. Our taxes when it comes to sales tax are on goods, not services. Illinois is a state that has been moderate the whole time I've lived here, and swung to a more, in 36 years is how long that's been, and swung to a more liberal, progressive state, I think, over the last decade. This does not reflect moderate or progressive values. We need to make changes to fix this. We can do much, much better. And so at the end of the day, like, what, you know, we have to, as a group, government leaders, civic leaders, business leaders, community leaders, we have to work with the state, our state legislature, and make changes so that we don't have this kind of situation. Because this is, to me, the crime of the century right here. And with that, I'm going to let you finally get back to your list of questions.
Well, there's 100 of them in about 2 minutes. I thank you for that. Sort of a master class in Chicago finances, right, and taxing and budget. We will have to further the conversation, but I think to sum up a number of questions is the mayor going to propose that service tax as the solution to two, the large gap that we know is coming, and will that probably, I don't know, will that replace or be in place of a property tax hike? And like, will it be enough?
Sounds like you want me to make news today.
We'd like to make news at City Club.
Which I'm not going to do today. I think there are a lot of nuances and considerations that go into anything that we would put in front of City Council members for consideration. And so we are still grappling with what we're going to put forward. We're still listening. We're still waiting for the working group recommendations. And so we want to take the time and space needed to, really be thoughtful about what we're going to put forward.
Yeah. So and I think an added point to that, though, is it's critical to know that we as a city could not impose a sales tax on services if we wanted to. This has to be done at the state level. So it goes back to the powers. We don't have the powers to do that. The services that we do tax, where if you see, the individual things, like we have amusement tax, a tax on tickets, that's a service tax in essence. We have individual kinds of particular taxes. Those are all ones we have particular state authorization to do. And they fall into a large bucket of local taxes that we manage very well. Our local taxes grow, at a nice consistent level. We manage them to do that, unlike the state taxes, which are more flat. So this is something that would have to happen at the state level. And the mayor has been talking about this for about 2 years now. He and I have had a number of public events where we've talked about it. We think that this is an important area that, at some point or another, we'd love to see the state take action on.
Okay. And one more simple one. What is the budget deficit? What's the number?
So we have our forecast coming out at the end of this month. We're looking to see what implications last year's budget has to the forecast going forward. The budget that was ultimately passed by City Council had a number of structural solutions to it. We did raise about five or six taxes last year or for this year. So we are, and they are overperforming what our budget estimates are. So those will have an impact on the forecast. But we also have a number of things that have come up since last year's forecast. We'll be finalizing, I think, our final CBAs with a number of our unions. We have increases to our pension funds that will have occurred. We also have,
today and just this week alone, I think we've heard.
So again, unfunded mandates coming from, Springfield, which again puts a lot of pressure on not only the city of Chicago. So everything that we just talked about is not something that the city of Chicago is experiencing uniquely. Every municipality, every town, every village in the state suffers from those similar ones. The pension one actually is unique to Chicago because that bill was specific to Chicago. But, every time that things like that happen where unfunded mandates are passed down in Springfield and they don't give you the revenue to support it, it does make us either cut services, which again are felt differently by different people in the city of Chicago because of the income disparity that Jill is talking about. So cut services or raise revenue. And we have limited means in which to raise that revenue. So, for us, when it comes to what we'll put in front of City Council, it'll be measured, it'll be thoughtful, it'll be, through a lot of discussions that we're having. But you probably will see a level of cuts, and you will probably see some thoughtful revenue proposals put forward.
I would love to get into all of that, and hopefully we will again. As I mentioned, we're going to have a follow-up program, or it sounds like three or four, potentially. So much more to cover, but we do respect everybody's time here because you're all doing your part to move this economy along so this all can happen. Thank you so much, Annette. Thank you so much, Jill, for being here today and giving us this overview of what can be done and what we imagine might be coming. And thank you for all the work that goes on behind the scenes. I know there are a number of folks in the room that are part of your teams, and there's an awful lot of work that goes into this very difficult equation and formula. So it's appreciated. Public service is always appreciated by all of us here at City Club. And your time here, again, very much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
As I mentioned briefly, we have the Inspector General Deb Witzberg coming up on August 26th. I hope you'll join us for that. Shedd Aquarium's CEO is coming on August 20th, and she's got some interesting things to show and talk about. Congressman Mike Quigley is going to be here on August 28th. We have a really interesting consortium on a breast cancer research with a number of hospitals in Linsage coming on September 2nd. There's so much more to come. The Chicago Architecture Biennial, Sheriff Tom Dart is coming, Randy Conner, the Commissioner of the Water Department. We have an incredibly busy fall, and there's more to come even in between some of those that I've already mentioned. So please come on back, renew your membership, become a member if you haven't already. We love having you all here together, moving this city forward, and we love hearing your ideas for future programming. Thanks again. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful day. Thanks, Annette.
Thank you.